Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Sports City. Happy week 7. Let's go.
Woo! 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 And back, niggas. Out there for their purchase. We surely appreciate it. But you about to witness is my thoughts.
Just my thoughts, man.
Right or wrong. Just what I was feeling at the time. You ever felt like this?
Okay, Sports City. We are back in the building. The call-in number is 929-477-2759. We got the next 60 minutes or more locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world. Here with the chefs. Sports City, I must say, as of last night, it went down so crazy that, of course, I love sports. Of course, I'm in here in the kitchen, and I got all the pots and pans for your food for thought and trying to cook up as best as I possibly can. But everything that was going on yesterday, edge of the seat, entertainment and fun, and I must say this, Sports City, as much as and as bad as the state of the country, the world, us as people are, sports has to bring us together. Like this is one thing that just unites us some way, one way or another. You got a favorite team, whether you are of one party or the other or one race or another, and disregard any of all of that, and it kind of frees your mind. And we get to get excited about whatever happens, win, lose, or draw, or watching another team go through a miraculous comeback or whatever agony or thrill they may have. It's just awesome to be, you know, entertained by sports. And a lot of stuff went on throughout the week, and also as of yesterday for Saturday is amazing stuff that went down Saturday. I don't even know which way to begin this or start this off, but I am going to like kick it off and do this as quick as I possibly can for how Saturday went down. And the first thing that I'm going to get out the way, and I don't even want to say, like, get it out the way, right? The status of the UFC and how everything went down yesterday, and knowing that they are overseas or they're not fighting in America, the time differential was different. The fights took, well, you know, the better preliminary and undercards started around 2 o'clock. And going into the, I want to say co-main event, but I think it was still an undercard, though, was the Whitaker fight, where Whitaker took care of business. Volkov also had a knockout, a body kick. He kicked Harris in the stomach, and watching Harris just go crippled, it's amazing. I want to see if Volkov will end up fighting Stipe Miocic. Hopefully they put it together. It's looking like they're trying to keep that slate clean for him so he could build a bigger name, so we could try to build steam toward that fight. But it would be pretty much interesting that it is a big guy with a different type of fight style that would probably come after Stipe. But I want to see how that may end up happening. Again, the Whitaker fight had a good tone to it. He ended up finishing the fight, and he's actually looking for Israel because they are in the same weight class. So if he could get Adesanya, that, man, listen, I don't know where that fight will take place, and more than likely it'll probably be on Fight Island the way that things are going down. Unless they can get them to go to Vegas, that would be intense and insane. But I'm trying to save face as Whitaker took care of business up against Kenan Yeh in a unanimous decision. But This is like tough for me, right? Like on both sides of the fence, you know what I'm saying? Justin Gaethje and Khabib Nurmagomedov. If I'm saying your name, I always dodge it and try to just say Khabib because everybody knows you. You have a one name reference, and forever will be like tattooed in my memory. Khabib took care of business up against Justin Gaethje. I am a fan of both of these guys. I cannot sit here and act like I don't like both of these guys in the fighting world. And looking at it, right, I'm like, Justin can be the one to stop Khabib because he said he can't let Khabib get him up against the cage. If he does, he knows it's over. He had to try his best to stay in the middle of the octagon and win this fight. And I'm like, good answer. And, you know, he's like, I try my best not to get grabbed. I'm going to fight like crazy to not let him grab me and, you know, fight with a good pace. And he did as much as he could in the first round. And it made it very interesting. It was very close late in the first round. Khabib ends up getting him to the ground and trying to force his will and get to Gaethje, but that was the end of the round. As soon as they come out, it just got nasty. It's crazy because he got to him quick because he knew how to take him down. Once he got him down already, it was like I want to say he more exerted energy out of Justin, and it was like he just was getting started. And once he got to him and got him on the ground, Justin tried to work his way to get up, and he did, but Khabib ended up putting a triangle choke on him, and Justin went to try to, like, slam him off of him, but he really couldn't. And when he did, you know what I'm saying, I guess the grip must have gotten tighter, and once it got tighter, he started, I want to more or less say lost energy or lost his breath, but he ended up tapping out. And everybody knows that within this past year of the COVID situation, that's kind of where I was starting with the emotional reference, you know, of us being together with sports. Khabib finished the fight, no bragging. He told all of his team to stay away from him. And I think his faith is more or less around the Muslim or Islam heritage. And he did his praise, and you know, more or less he was, you know, praying to Allah, and also in reference probably to his father, he just broke down and just started crying. And it was emotional watching that. Like it looked like a movie, but it's real because of how people are losing people, within myself also losing people also. So it's like I felt him in that moment. And he was down there for about 90 seconds, maybe 2 minutes, trying to get his stuff together. Once Justin got his air together, and knowing that everybody, he told everybody to stay away from him, Justin went over to him and, like, tried to embrace him. And Khabib stayed there for, like, another 5 seconds, got up, and they really, like, you know, they got a good mutual respect for each other, so they really understood each other. And, you know, they did the post-fight interview, and Khabib retires right on the spot. Made sure he took his gloves off so he could leave them in the octagon and retire right on the spot, and referred to his father, you know, being the one that this was his dream, his push, and, you know, he fought the fight that he wanted to fight, fighting with Justin Gaethje. You know, his father really wanted him to fight GSP, but it wasn't his, you know, thing to carry. And I think he's basically saying that he carried the torch on all of the different instances and fights that he wanted to carry. So that was awesome and very emotional, and don't really see that in a fighting game. And it got me messed up. I'm like, yo, serious? Like, watching this fight and knowing I was all hype, it went from hype to, like, emotional and everything. Like people in the bar that was watching the fight just started, you know, round of applause for him. And it was like, I wish we was there at Fight Island or something, but, you know, the state of the world got us kind of caged in as much as possible. But epic fight, and even though it didn't go the full five rounds, and, you know, it was stopped off of a submission hold, I give Khabib a lot of credit to get that done. Justin Gaethje, they interviewed him after, and he was like, nah, it ain't about me, man. That guy deserves his recognition. It's hard not to be a fan of both of these guys. They are humble, and I felt good when Khabib finally talked junk, because it was like Conor called him out. And it was like, you know, Conor pulled that nastiness out of him, so he had to kind of answer the bell. And that, you know, that one little situation where they fought, it kind of pulled the real Khabib out of him. But just as humble as he was, and as honorable, and Gaethje, they interviewed him and said, well, you know, since he's retiring, that belt is vacant, so you might have a potential to have another fight after. And he's like, yeah, of course. But you could tell his body language is like he wanted to win it against Khabib. And excellent stuff, man. MMA, UFC, I give you guys a salute. Awesome stuff. From Phil Hawes' knockout, that knockout was insane. Volkov stopping Harris with a stomach kick. And it, you know, it's one of those body shots. Either a punch or a kick to drop somebody. Whitaker taking care of business, and Khabib submitting Justin Gaethje. Even when Justin Gaethje said he wouldn't go to the fifth or try his best not to let him get there, and knowing that is the game plan, because Khabib was strong when he got you up against the wall, he just got him there and stopped the fight. And the way that it ended, I mean, I got to tip my hat. Khabib, you get the the nod of the day, if you will, to set off the kitchen right. I don't even know how to announce it. You know what I'm saying? But I had to get that. I don't want to over or underlook that in any way, right? So the next thing I have is the NCAA football or college football, however you the top 25. I'm, you know, just trying to figure out the words to fit. No. I'm going to rehash that. We have important stuff to get into. I'll do the top 25. I'll do the top 25, and I'll get into the good stuff in just a moment. Like I said, I got so much stuff here written. It's like I didn't know how I wanted to go. So I'll do the top 25 first and keep on moving. So Friday night, Wisconsin opens up Big Ten play. They smash Illinois 45-7. Even though this game started out interesting, Wisconsin started out 7-0. Illinois got a score of a turnover, made it 7-7. After that, there was no more scoring for the Fighting Illini. They shut the door on them instantly up in Madison, 45-7. I want to say, 38 unanswered, 17 in the fourth quarter, 21 in that second quarter after the score was tied. Then opening up the top 25 on Saturday, this is where I said it was edge of your seat stuff. Clemson wins their game 47-21, in which this game was interesting. I don't want to say like tight, but it got interesting, especially in the second quarter where Syracuse made this a game. It was 21-27, and it looked like Syracuse had actually threatened Clemson, even though everybody's probably like, no way they could beat them, no way, no how. They were within one score and answering the bell of Clemson being up by double digits and still made this a game. But after a little while, it was over. It was clearly over. They ran away with it. They forced Trevor Lawrence to throw a pick, and at best, it was a pick six also. So that was his first, I think they said, ever. I don't think he's ever thrown a pick six in high school either or in college. So that was his first time he threw a pick six. He finishes with 289 yards passing. Travis Etienne had 86 yards rushing. But Syracuse actually made this an interesting game. But a lot of people figured, you know, Syracuse being 1-4 at the time probably wouldn't fare out well being in Death Valley in South Carolina. Clemson pulled that off. The number two Alabama Crimson Tide takes care of business up against Tennessee, winning that 48-17. Tennessee falls under 500 at this point. I really feel bad for Tennessee because they came out the gates playing good football this year and were ranked and fell out of the top 25. So I think they have to get away from these powerhouses to probably build their steam back up and get back into the top 25. But it's starting to show that the bigger names in the SEC are going to take care of business up against the weaker teams. But I think Tennessee is coming soon. I think this year is showing that there are glimpses of, you know, greatness possibly there, but not at the moment, especially up against the losses that they've taken from Georgia and now Alabama. Number three ranked Notre Dame. I basically want to call this a shutout, but they got 3 points on the board in the first quarter, but that was it. 45-3. Pittsburgh just came off of a loss from Miami, putting up 19 points in South Beach. They go out here to South Bend and can't put up anything but a 3-point effort. And their defense is notable as one of the top defenses in the nation. And Notre Dame ran the scoreboard up on them. Salute to Coach Kelly. Salute to Ian Book having a 300-yard passing day, 3 touchdowns thrown. Everything worked for them. They were able to score the ball on the ground and in the air. Ben Skowronek, I'm butchering that, but he only had 2 catches for 2 touchdowns, 107 yards. Excellent day for Notre Dame in South Bend. Opening up Big Ten play on a Saturday, even though I just said before the Friday night matchup with Wisconsin, you have Ohio State taking care of business up against Nebraska. Now, I feel bad, people, because I am from the 80s, 90s era, right? And this is college football at one of its best eras. And I know the Cornhuskers are a notable team throughout the nation, especially football-wise. They have not really had that reference, I want to say, in a good 10. I'll be fair. I'll say within the 10 years, they haven't been as strong as they should have. I think they will come around and end up playing good ball probably in the next 2 to 4 years. But just watching them get butchered by Ohio State, 52-17, not competitive at all. I feel bad, but Justin Fields had an amazing day, 20 for 21 passing, 276 yards, two touchdown passes as well. They put up double-digit scores each quarter. They were not taking their foot off the gas at all, were not trying to let Nebraska breathe to get in this game or build any confidence. But this is the first game for both of them, but, you know, this is a setback for Nebraska, especially with the limited schedule that they have within the season. So they're going to have to try and, you know, run the table as best as they can to, like, stay somewhat in the higher part of the standings within the Big Ten. Oklahoma State biting their nails in the Big 12. And finally, good ball or good defense being played in some of the Big 12 matchups. Oklahoma State wins their matchup up against Iowa State 24-21, in which this was a situation where it was a one-possession game. Iowa State made this a game, lost this by a field goal late. Salute to Iowa State because they have been playing well, but this is their second loss on the season. Oklahoma State is quietly undefeated, and nobody's really giving them their recognition or due. Shout out to, I don't want to say it, the Orange and Black Cowboys. I'll say it like that. Shout out to the Orange and Black Cowboys. Here we go. So this is the game that I could not wait to get to. The Indiana Hoosiers entertain or, you know, host the Penn State Nittany Lions. And Penn State, ranked number 8 in the nation, loses this game by 1. And the way that this game ended, Indiana was down a full touchdown. They were down 7. Indiana scores this ball late with seconds on the clock. They go for 2. So now it's like, this is where I'm talking about the edge of your seat type of sports, the what we all live for. We hold hands whether you are a different race, a different ethnicity, different religion, whatever. If you're from Indiana or rooting for the Hoosiers, then you know, everybody's different. And they will go for 2, and the quarterback takes off, and it's a play at the goal line going out of bounds, and he reaches for the pylon. It looks like it may have went out at the same time as he's crossing the goal line, but as long as he touches the pylon, that's normally the rule of thumb that's a score. So he was able to get to the pylon. They counted that 2-point conversion good, and knocks off Penn State to open up the gates for Big Ten play with a first upset within that conference. Salute to the Hoosiers. This bothered me because they had Ohio State and Penn State ranked, and they haven't even played a game, but Ohio State did what they needed to do. Penn State didn't, and they're kind of behind the eight ball. Even though they played a good game, impressive enough to have that lead late, Indiana fought back and withstood the storm and took them out in overtime, actually. I apologize. But that was an overtime game where they won that. Cincinnati cruises up against SMU 42-13 to hold it down in the American Athletic Conference. SMU, I thought, would have put out a better output with them both being undefeated. SMU was out-coached and out-willed, and except the second quarter, Cincinnati's putting up points on the board at an alarming clip, proving that they should be ninth ranked. But I want to see what it happens when they start playing stronger teams within their schedule. Now, me, at the edge of my doggone seat, the Virginia Cavaliers go to South Beach to play the Miami Hurricanes, and this turned out to be one of those games where I'm like, why me, why now? And, you know, Miami had a double-digit lead, and Virginia was running the clock as best as they could, trying to play fast-paced football, and it worked. They ended up throwing a touchdown pass late, and catching the defense snoozing, receiver all by himself. Both of the corners were basically eyes in the backfield, not being aware of their responsibilities and taking care of business up against the receiver. Receiver got behind. The defense scored a touchdown late to make it 14-19. And Miami did enough to keep the ball in their hands and run that clock out and get the ball back to Virginia with seconds left. And they couldn't get the ball deep because they needed to score a touchdown. They tried to do one of those hook and ladder type things, and they ended up trying to lateral the ball, and they fumbled, and it ended up the Canes recovering and putting their turnover chain. So me at the edge of my seat, like, Virginia always has that game surprise factor up against Miami, but Miami held on to take out the Cavaliers 19-14. BYU is a team to be reckoned with, even though this game started out interesting with Texas State putting up scores, well, a score early in the first quarter, but BYU ran that game out of submission, winning this 52-14, in which Zach Wilson I am aware of you now. You cannot get away from me. I will be watching. 19 for 25, 287 yards passing, 4 touchdowns thrown. And his go-to guy and his roommate, Dax Milne, had 4 receptions for 89 yards and a touchdown. The two of them, they're going to get their credit due when it's their time to come. Zach Wilson may leave college early. He has it to leave now, but if he stayed in college next year, he could potentially bring a Heisman back home out to the Mountain West area. So salute to BYU for them to be a 12th-ranked team. You have North Carolina up against North Carolina State, in-state battle and ACC matchup. North Carolina State has been playing good ball up until this point. They played North Carolina coming off of their loss up against Florida State, and they did not play any game. They won this game 48-21. Especially how good North Carolina State has been playing up until this point. Sam Howell finally showed that he's ready for the rest of the, you know, conference to take note of what he's been able to do this far in this season. So North Carolina wins this game by double digits. They damn near put up 50. 48 is close to 50 to me, but I'll give them 2 points. So it's 48-21. The next matchup starting up Big Ten play was Michigan winning their matchup up against Minnesota, 49-24. I just want to see Michigan keep this theme going, and if something has to give to Harbaugh. And I don't really put all of this on Harbaugh, but you're the coach. You've been there for a couple years now. It has to change, but this has to be the year they knock off Ohio State. And I really still don't think they have the guns to do it. I don't think they have enough ammunition to go to war with Justin Fields and company, especially the way that they look in their matchup up against Nebraska. But we'll see. Things do happen. You can't measure these games on paper, but it still looks like it's favoring Ohio State. We have another upset. Virginia Tech goes to Winston-Salem and takes on Wake Forest. Wake Forest wins this game 23-16. I still tip my hat to Virginia Tech with everything that they've been able to deal with, you know, battling the COVID and having a 3-1 record going into this game, losing this game and having an equivalent record now, both of them being 3-2. ACC has strong play. And looking at these teams, especially a Wake Forest that was not ranked to knock off a Virginia Tech team. So salute to the Demon Deacons. No-brainer situation. Kansas State, in-state battle within the Big 12. Here goes the Big 12. 55-14, Kansas gives up 55 points up against a Les Miles team. Even though Les Miles has been fighting the COVID situation, this has not lifted the gloom over the Kansas football situation. Kansas Jayhawks basketball is another thing, but even Les Miles can't come in there and rewrite that university football-wise. But I'll give him next year. I want to be fair and say next year something has to give. This can't be this bad, and he has that caliber of winning a national championship. Hopefully Kansas can turn this thing around, being a Division I college in football play. You have Marshall, the Thundering Herd, taking care of business up against Florida Atlantic, 20-9. Of course, well, me, I'm now aware that Marshall's putting up points, but they didn't put up a lot of points this game, but they did knock off FAU in a Conference USA matchup, winning this by double digits. And lastly, the Coastal Carolina team that pulled off the upset last week winning that game up against the ranked team. They are now the 25th ranked team, winning this game and remaining undefeated, 5-0 up against Georgia Southern, rounding out the top 25, 28-14, in which Fred Payton threw for 252 yards and 3 touchdown passes thrown as well to round out the top 25. Now, I said I wanted to get into the meat and potatoes of Saturday. And I can't get away from, you know, the hysteria that took place in the World Series. And they kind of threw me off because I wanted to get into the Khabib situation first. I wanted to follow it up with baseball just because of how heightened and hyped this situation was. But I can't overlook this. Let me just be clear with this score. The Rays win this game 8-7. In the ninth inning, in where the Dodgers had a 7-6 lead, and the way that the Dodgers have been playing, so inspired, knowing that the Astros robbed them, and it looked like their destiny is on their side. They, like, redeemed themselves for everything that they've been through for the past couple of seasons. I think out of the past 3 World Series, they've been to 2 of them and lost both of them, one with Boston and one with Houston. And everybody knows about the scandal between the skipper from Boston and then the whole thing that happened with Houston as they won their World Series up against the Dodgers. The Dodgers have a lead late. And, you know, I don't want to call him a no-namer because he's a professional baseball player. But Phillips comes up to the plate with two men on. He hits a good hit into, you know, I want to say right center. And there's a botch of the ball, and where Taylor gets the ball, and he loses it. And the base runner all the way from first gets from first to third, and the ball's coming in to the cutoff man. The cutoff man throws it straight to home, and he they had him burnt by a mile. And the base runner basically was looking like to get into a pickle, but then once they seen the ball scurrying away, he slides in right at the right time and wins the game 7-8 for Tampa Bay. I'm telling you, this is like where sports lives, just the hype. And looking at Seager had a good game as well. The Dodgers are doing the best that they can. Turner's been hitting the hell out of the ball, too, for this team. It's bad that the way that the Dodgers lost this game, because it was a defensive, you know, error. I can't really just put this all on Taylor, but he's the one that had the error that was critical for the game to be tied or won at that point in time, which it ended up being a win for the Tampa Bay Rays to save face to push this to a 2-2 field matchup. So this is big. I didn't want to see the Rays go down 3-1, because if it went down 3-1, you know, the win from their sales gets pulled. So I think that is the situation that happens here. We go into a game five, and these game fives are more pivotal than anything, because it gives them that hype to, you know, be like, we got one more game to get. So I don't know who wants it. The matchup is Clayton Kershaw. Clayton, you could clear the slate with me if you could pull this off, or if you're more or less influential or could keep the runs to a minimal for Tampa. But, you know, Tampa's going to be just as hyped to try and get their first championship win in the World Series era as they come to the league. So phenomenal stuff, I must say. That game was awesome watching that go down. And Arozarena, that's how I think I'm butchering it. But he was the one that got into the potential pickle and the ball scurry from the catcher, and he ends up scoring the game when it run. And that's one of those epic moments that could happen in sports. They're going to show him sliding and tapping home plate like he was safe. You know, epic stuff between MMA, between the World Series, the few upsets that happened in college football. To me, I was at the edge of my seat watching a lot of this stuff go down. Okay, so I am going to get into my Week 7 picks, predictions, things of that nature. Before I do get into that, we do have an interesting situation that happened in the NFL, and I am beyond myself, like, personally, because of what just happened. Yesterday, as the grumbling started storming that we are getting close to Week 8 and Week 9 potentially, they are looking at the situation of Antonio Brown, his suspension being lifted and him being able to come back and play football. So the first team that was interested was the Seattle Seahawks, and Russell Wilson had, you know, some reps with him over the summer. They worked out and things looked good for them, and he was trying to bring him there with, you know, the receiving core that they had. I think that would definitely made that a stronger power coming out of the NFC West. And here goes the story of a guy named Brady. Now, him and Bruce Arians are like, oh, no. This guy's in our backyard. He's in Florida. Go get him, not now, but right now. And I didn't really think about the situation that happened with the receivers down there in Tampa. They are somewhat injury-prone. I don't want to call them prone, but they have an injury history. Let's just say injury history. And I think that was a security blanket to get a all-pro receiver. No matter how people view him in the locker room and him having his phone and going crazy on social media and things of that nature, he's his own enemy. I agree. Like, he is, you know, bad for business when it comes to that. But as of him stepping in between those four lines, I wanted him. Like bring him to me. Like that. That's what I wanted. But I would rather him be in Seattle and fight their way out of the West, even though they're playing undefeated ball and people are saying keep him away from Seattle because he could mess up the chemistry there. But, you know, it was something about Pete Carroll saying that he could probably calm the situation down, and him and Russell having camaraderie, that may have worked out. They didn't even get a shot to get that to happen. Tampa Bay shut the door on that immediately, getting him to talk and settling that deal as soon as possible. They got him for 1 year, and more than likely, if he's impressive, just picture if they re-sign him to an interesting deal, and it'll be him, Mike Evans, Godwin, O.J. Howard when he returns from injury, and Gronk if Gronk wants to continue to play this thing, and Brady's going to be on his second season. And potentially after this season, it depends on how things, you know, swirl around for Tampa Bay, Brady may end up playing in a Super Bowl in his home field in Tampa, and I could tell how crazy that would be. The initials of Tampa Bay being TB, Tom Brady TB, they would love every little bit of trying to build this up as much as possible for him to sell tickets and, you know, build the hype around the Super Bowl. But I feel it. But definitely for all of the people that, you know, poo-pooed him, and it's so crazy because I brought this up before the Seahawks entertainer. I talked about it here in the kitchen this week, Tuesday night on the free-for-all. And then Wednesday comes around, and they said that the Seahawks are interested. And then by Saturday, the Buccaneers sign him. Talk about being frustrated. Talk about, like, I know y'all eating what's in the kitchen. I love it, though. I love it, but it's like Antonio Brown and Brady, and just Brady to tell him to be quiet. Like, if Brady could get him to be quiet and just come out here and do what you do, it's impressive. So just to get that to go down. Okay, so I'm going to get into these picks for the Week 7 here in the NFL week. Okay, so the first matchup I have, I'm going to get this one out of the way. My heart's involved. We have the 2-3 Detroit Lions up against the 1-5 Atlanta Falcons, in which the Atlanta Falcons are coming off of their first win of the season, and the Lions are coming off of their second win up against Jacksonville on the road. They didn't do anything but come from Florida and go into Georgia. They did not get to go home, basically staying in the southeast region of the United States. I'm going to go with my boys. I am, just because my heart is involved. But if my heart wasn't involved, being analytical, I'm going to pull for the Falcons, because the Falcons have way more offensive power than the Lions do, especially with one of our corners being down and Julio is healthy. So if they're able to win this game, they're going to have to slow down Julio, or just – I more or less just said the offense in general, because Todd Gurley is going to try and get effective in this game, because he hasn't really had one of those breakout games. This potentially can be that game, and that passing game, including Cuzzo, Brandon Powell being dealt from Detroit last season. You know, that's that chip on your shoulder type situation. So we have to slow that offense down to win this game. From Matty Ice on down, you got to get the head of the snake. I'm not going to say what Coach Williams said and, you know, cut the head off the snake or whatever, if that's bad or good. But I understand, knowing that I played the sport, so I get it. But, yeah, I'm going with the Lions. I got to be personal, because the Lions could end up being 500, but the Falcons could end up winning this game and, you know, building up a winning streak, winning their second game on the season. But I'm going with the Lions to try and pull this one off. The next matchup I have is the Battle of Ohio. We have the Cleveland Browns up against the Cincinnati Bengals, in which this is taking place in Ohio. In Cincinnati. And after the game of the outrage of Baker Mayfield losing the game, well, a lot of people put a lot of the onus on Baker, the way that they looked up against Pittsburgh last week. I feel bad, but it is true. He's the number one pick. He came there to make change, and he's more or less a game manager and hasn't really built the trust around him, with Odell getting mad, losing the big games, and, you know, the coach is trying to give him plays that he can handle, but more or less try to build the running game up and make it more easier for Baker. I understand on all spectrums, and it's like Baker has to answer these questions. So if I'm going to pick in this game, I am going to pick the Browns, but I would not be surprised if the Bengals win this game. If Joe Burrow can pull this off and win this game up against the Browns, the rumblings will begin about Baker Mayfield and his job. They're going to have to either get another quarterback in there to push him or start moving people, or they're going to have to get another quarterback within the draft. I wish Nas was here to discuss that, because that's something that me and Nas have been talking about heavily, and they're trying to get rid of, you know, the garbage, if you will. So I am going to say that one, to say the least. The next matchup we have is probably the potential game of the day. In my eyes, it is the game of the day. You have the Pittsburgh Steelers up against the Tennessee Titans. Both of these teams are 5-0, unbeaten on the season. It's bad, because if I look at this right, I'm looking at the situation around Tennessee and them losing their all-pro, potential highest-paid player on the team, or one of, I'll say that, and Taylor Lewan being lost for the season due to injury. but they still have that, you know, the receiving core to push the ball downfield. Ryan Tannehill, you slowly impressed me. I turned my thoughts around you. I will no longer talk junk until, you know, I guess the glass slipper falls off. You're in the ball now. You're in the ball and you're dancing. You're doing what you need to do. I don't really want to keep calling you Cinderella or whatever right now, but you're doing the job. But Derrick Henry is that guy. Point blank, period. And I know the Steelers are good dealing with the run also. So this is battle against battle, strong smash mouth football, the powerhouse run game going up against a powerhouse run defensive game. If the passing game gets involved, it's Big Ben versus Ryan Tannehill, and Ben has his resume laid out for him, people. So that is one. If I have to pick, I'm going to pick the Steelers on the road, right? But I want Tennessee to win. I'm picking the Steelers on the road, but I want Tennessee to win. But I'm going with the Steelers in this matchup. I just think that Big Ben is too much with this offense, with the receivers around him. Chase Claypool, as mentioned before, he made a big name for himself also in NFL play, especially throughout the first 6 weeks. Getting a lot of touchdown grabs coming straight out of college. This is awesome for this game to happen. Again, get your popcorn ready. This is basically a pick 'em. Tennessee favored by 1.5 at home, but I feel the Steelers, with the veterans that they have loaded on that team, and the defense is built to try and stop the Titans. I'm going with the Steelers, but I want the Titans to win. The next matchup, this is the Hey Buddy game. Hey Buddy, how you doing? The Panthers are 3-3. The Saints are 3-2. They just let Bridgewater go, and he got the starting job as the Panthers released Cam Newton. So now Bridgewater was supposed to have that job behind Drew Brees, but Drew Brees was like, I'm retiring when I'm ready, and I understand it. You know, that dog, and you want to let them keep going. Panthers-Saints, it takes place in Mercedes-Benz Superdome. I'm going to favor the Saints. I am going to favor the Saints. But with them without their receivers, this makes this a very interesting matchup. With no Emmanuel Sanders due to the COVID situation, and Michael Thomas, they're saying that he could potentially miss this week and next week. They're saying it's a 1 to 2 week thing. So I am still thinking that the Saints are strong enough to win this game at home. Brees will probably open this game up as best as possible. He still has Kamara behind him. The Panthers have had these games of surprise to pull these off. If the Panthers, and I said this to somebody last night also, I said if the Panthers win this game, they are holding on as much as possible until McCaffrey comes back, and they'll still have them suitable to make a push to at least be in the wild card for the playoff table as we get closer to the month of November and December. So watch this closely. I'm picking the Saints, but I want to see what the Panthers do. If the Panthers pull off the win, this will be big for the you know, for them moving forward, especially getting this one within the division. Now, this one is a very troubling situation. The Bills are going up against the Jets, in which the Jets are begging for a win. Darnold is questionable, so we'll see how that goes. The Bills are coming off of an interesting loss up against the Chiefs. The Bills are down. I want y'all to hear me closely. They are down four tight ends. So more than likely, they're going with a practice squad player or a fifth string if they have a fifth string tight end. But this is an interesting situation going up against the Jets. The Jets are at home. Like it looks like it favors the Jets. I'm going Bills, though. I'm picking the Bills. But that shock value, it will be there if the Jets are able to pull this game off, because they have missing pieces on the side of the ball for the Bills. But the spread is still 10 in this game. So that is an unfortunate situation that they are missing the safety blanket for the quarterback, Josh Allen. The next matchup we have is the Dallas Cowboys up against the Washington football team. Now, this is tricky, people. I want to say this, right? Cowboys are unfortunate right now without Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott broke his ankle. I don't know how I really want to call the significance of the injury or however he's done for the season, and we're waiting to see, you know, the timetable of his comeback or so on and so forth. I'm Me personally, I think that this could be a 10 to 12 month situation. I think it'll probably be back around July, hopefully, if he's feeling good. But knowing that he's a mobile quarterback, he'd have to take it as easy as possible. But nevertheless, Andy Dalton's been there trying to be the game manager, and he's not looked impressive up until this point. They still have all of the weapons on the offensive side of the ball. It's tough because right now this went from Dallas being favored by one earlier this week to becoming a pick 'em, and now to the point where Washington is favored. Vegas is up to something, but I'm not buying it. I will say the Cowboys will win this game, especially with the Washington football team losing their last matchup up against the New York Giants. And it was a 19-20 game, and they went for two instead of kicking the extra point. And they had no play set up for them to surely get into the end zone. So I think there's some heavy inconsistencies with the Washington football team. I think this is a game that could get the Cowboys back on track. If the Cowboys lose this game, I think they lose a lot of momentum. I think they start to lose that locker room. And more than ever, I think the Mike McCarthy grumblings will grow bigger. I don't think they'll fire him, but I think there'll be a lot of people asking for what's going on, or you will hear people asking for his job, but I don't think they get rid of him. But if they lose this game, it'll be due. It definitely will be due, especially with Mike Nolan and the questionable situation with them being one of the bottom of the league and team defense and things of that nature, and having them get bombed on in the passing game. The next matchup we have are the Green Bay Packers going up against the Houston Texans, in which the Texans are slowly trying to make this interesting. They got their first win a while ago, and Green Bay got their first loss on the season going up against Tampa Bay and Tom Brady down there in Florida. I don't think a losing streak starts now. I'm not going with the aura of Vegas, which they have Green Bay favored by 3 in Houston. I feel like something is funny about this, and it could push people interesting enough to pick Houston, but Houston's looked bad all season long. I'm going with the Packers, no-brainer. If they lose, I'll explain myself when that time comes around, more or less Wednesday night, being in the kitchen, and I'll probably be impressed if Houston could do damage in winning a game and not just squeaking by. Either way, if they pull this win off, it's interesting enough, and knowing J.J. Watt is a Wisconsin guy too. So there's a lot of stuff on the line here. To build up toward the 4 o'clock games, the first game we have, well, it was supposed to be the nightcapper. It was supposed to be a Sunday night matchup, but due to the COVID situation going on in the organization, the Raiders and the Buccaneers game was forced to be an afternoon game instead of the night game. The Buccaneers go into Vegas to play the Raiders, in which it's the Battle of the Pirates. Both of these teams have 2 losses on the season. This is the more or less the Gruden game. So this was when John Gruden got traded as a coach to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So everything's on the line. You got a strong offense in Tampa Bay going up against an up-and-coming defense in Las Vegas. I just said Vegas. I'm going with Brady and company. The Bucs are favored by 4. I think they get this done, but there is some surprise here. I feel like that can happen. The surprise can happen here. The Raiders have played well. I really can't. Even though they lost that game up against New England, they beat the Chiefs. Like you got to give them some leeway for that. They knocked off the Chiefs recently. So I am going to go Bucs, but I will be shocked if they can pull this off. So, Derek, let's see what you got up your sleeve. Let's see. Or if Brady keeps this thing rolling, especially building off the momentum of knocking off Rodgers too. I'm going to Buccaneers. I think the Buccaneers pulled this one off. It's October 25th, people, and the Chiefs and the Broncos are playing in Colorado, in Mile High, and there's snow during this game. 3 to 6 inches of snow due to fall during this game. This is like the NFL powers that be did something special for the Broncos to try and slow this offense down somehow. Kansas City is favored by 7.5. I'll do this interesting. To say covering, I think the Broncos actually win the game with the points, with 7.5. The Chiefs will win this game, but I think this will be closer than expected due to the nature that, you know, Mother Nature's involved. Finally, a game where it tried to help the Broncos somehow, some way to, you know, try to pull them to .500. But I don't think they beat the Chiefs, but I think that they keep this closer than 7 points. The next 4 o'clock game we have, this is the Jimmy Garoppolo game, where everybody's been talking about it all week long, especially with Tom Brady playing longer than expected. Ended up getting Jimmy Garoppolo dealt to San Francisco, and Belichick wanted him to stay, and Kraft didn't want to get rid of Brady, so they ended up, you know, having some moves be made and let Jimmy start up his own career. And Jimmy carries the Niners to the Super Bowl last year, and everybody knows what happened with 6 seconds left on the clock and the lead that they had. But nevertheless, a lot of people are waiting to see who needs to impress who. Is it a Cam Newton game where Cam has to rebuild this situation out here in Massachusetts because his game is at home, or is Jimmy Garoppolo for real? Is that was fool's gold of a season last year, or is he for real to come back home and knock off the Patriots? This is tough for me, man. I don't know which way to go. I really want to say Patriots, man. I really do, because they're at home. But the Niners, they're getting comfortable within that offense, and I think they have enough weapons to threaten the defense. Man, you know what? I'm going to go Patriots. I'm going to go Patriots. With them being at home, interesting enough, they do not lose back-to-back games. I think this would be a monster of a loss if they lose to the Niners at home. Them being 2-4 within their rank, their record, and was slowly falling to a trap with the Bills. They would have to hope for the Bills to start losing a lot after the Bills losing their first game out of the gates last week up against the Chiefs. So I'm going to go Patriots. I don't think Bill Belichick loses 2 games in a row. Interesting enough, they're favored by 3 at home and that close. So there are big issues within New England, and it's not just Cam getting, you know, comfortable after being sick, but within that receiving core, I don't really think there's a big name in that receiving core that's doing the damage that they need. The next matchup we have is the Jacksonville Jaguars going up against the Los Angeles Chargers. The Chargers are favored by 7.5, where the Jags flying cross country to go up against the Chargers. I'm going to go with the Chargers. I don't think they cover the 7.5. I think this game will be closer than expected. The Jaguars, with that surprise factor, them being 1-5, but you know this could be a game where it could trap people. The Chargers are 1-4. They have bad records, but they both are playing good football. It's like don't let that record fool you, because they can win these games. But I'm going to go Chargers at home, but I think the Jaguars cover that 7.5. Being pushed, this was a flip since the situation happened with the Raiders and the COVID scenario. We have the Seattle Seahawks going to Arizona up against the Cardinals, where the Cardinals had probably one of the biggest surprise upsets in Dallas up against the Cowboys and beating the living crap out of them 38-10 on Monday night. This is a very interesting and special game because it's like Russ Wilson versus Russell Wilson 2.0 and Kyler Murray. This is tough. I'm going with Seattle on the road, though. But I would not – okay, I'm going with Seattle on the road, but I would not be surprised if the Cardinals won this game. I'm going to say that now, Sports City, because the Seahawks secondary isn't that great, and DeAndre Hopkins is involved in that receiving game that can make a difference, and Kyler Murray just impressed a lot of people with Kirk being a bomb specialist too. So if they can keep that chemistry going, I think they can impress the Seahawks, and knowing that he has won against Russell within Seattle as well too, that's there. So I'm going to go Seahawks. But this is one of those get your popcorn ready, and we're going to wait all night for Sunday football. That is for sure. To round out the Monday night games, we have the Chicago Bears up against the Los Angeles Rams. The Rams are favored by 6 at home. This is very, very scary, Sports City. I'm like scared to death about this game because it's like people overlook, you know, the Bears. Every matchup they have, it's like, you know, if they're playing a strong team, it's like, okay, this is when the train stops, the Bears are going to lose, that's that. The Bears are outmatched, they're outgunned, they're going to lose, and they come out with a win. Somehow, some way, the Bears have been playing impressive enough to do what they need to do to win games. I'm going to pull the trigger for the Rams. I think the Rams do win this game Monday night, but I would not be impressed if the Bears come out and sting the Rams at home. It's just something about Nick Foles and him having that big play game, especially with him having that steam built after beating Brady and the Patriots that Super Bowl. It's like every time somebody counts him out, he comes out with a big game. So This is a big game where everybody's watching Monday Night Football. And if the Bears win this game, 6-1, they sit atop the NFC North, and nobody's talking about the Chicago Bears. If the Bears win this game up against the Rams, I got to give them at least a 5-minute rant on how good they are at this point. For them to be in week 7 and, you know, being 5-1 at this point is definitely exceptional. I want to say above exceptional. I'm trying to figure out the word to plug there for what they've been able to do up until this point. The teams that are out of this week, the bye are the Colts, the Dolphins, Vikings, and Ravens. Other than that, everything has been covered for the week. And like I said, sports pandemonium was all yesterday and throughout the week as well. I definitely want to tip my hat to Khabib and the way that he was able to play. Way that he was able to fight that fight, knowing that he had the emotional weight on his shoulder of losing his father's recent and all of the travel situation that he had to get through, and Justin being as humble as he could, getting this thing done. So salute to both of those guys. The World Series is hype and got everybody back involved, and people are saying baseball is fun again, and baseball is always fun, especially if there's a team that's not giving up, you know, knowing that every at-bat counts. I have to give that its credit as well. Top 25, especially college football, and energy is back in the building. The sports are here for the at least for the bird months, as October's getting ready to close within a set next 7 days or so. We will have November coming around, and that's when it's at a premium. It's supposedly basketball would have been back, but dealing with COVID, it's not around. So we will see. And they have had grumbling saying that the basketball season may potentially start on Christmas or before. I'm hoping that it starts before Christmas, because I'll be in the Valley, God willing, around that time. So hopefully they can get some NBA back before Christmas. Hopefully. My fingers are crossed for City. But that's the end of the show. We're going to keep things moving. I will see you guys back here Wednesday night, me, Barry, and the crew during the cookout, cooking up a lot of these scores and things that are going down within the league, and seeing how we can prepare for Antonio Brown. Is he up to his old antics, or if he's a changed man? You know, Dallas' situation at quarterback. There's some names that have been thrown out there, and if they do pull the trigger on a name that I heard that may potentially be in the air, that would be monumental. I don't know what else to say, Sports City. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
For tomorrow, we keep it alive. Respect to the newcomers, but respect mine. I'm young spitfire like a flamethrower. H the reason I'm dope now, I told him. My brother, I got this, we got this. Silk in the bag, my bruh, it's in the pocket, Fresh from the era of being terror. Yeah, we made it, bitch. Most niggas never. Now, look up now, we like a mirage. Up to date, everything, Sergeant Boss. Captain Hooks, I front you at 16. Let niggas a few lines. Yeah, that's mine. This groundbreaking fresh. There is no blueprint. Set a few trends to move on to new shit. All praise to dude and infamous too. Fuck is that shit you rap? It's not true. We are timeless, timeless, priceless. Like my hammer not dumping. These days got my goonies on deck though. With nothing to live for and let go. Dead ass in front of police. Billy kid shit with a cold reach. And he got me speaking with a slow speech. And it's over done, spit it so deep. Lock at the bottom, I'm low key. Don't want you anymore, she chose me. Fuck out of here, kissing on the rosary. Like a bitch on the period, it's long mine. The rocket science small deep, know we shine. We at war, niggas gotta hold the line. Cowards looking with it like it's overtime. You a false flag, still gonna hold a nine. Timeless, timeless. Priceless, priceless. Timeless, timeless.
Now that you're nothing. Money buys dignity. Poverty is a crime. Nobody asked you where you got your dollar. They asked you, do you have it? That idealistic shit don't pay your rent. I don't want to start philosophizing anyway.
Can you blame me? I was raised from a cold street. Make for a better story what they told me. Sad part, this shit is real life. Pressure on me enough to break a fucking steel pipe. White blood on my razor blade. Teach niggas how to chill out and make way. When you see me take it easy, best believe me. This the real world, nigga, not TV. M-O-B-B. Money over bum bitches, deeper than the sea floor. You sleep with the fishes when you try my tolerance, dumb nigga. I'm a hip-hop god, you just a fuck nigga. I do this for reals, you wish you could. Talking like you will, I wish you would. Start a war, get it on. You are not that strong, we are timeless.